Throughout my life, the Ten Rings gave our family power. If you want them to be yours one day, you have to show me you are strong enough to carry them.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Tower of Babel podcast. As always, I'm Julian Mush. I'm joined by Jeremy Cozier.
Hello.
And we are going to be talking about today, we're going to be reviewing Shang-Chi
and
the Legend of the Shang-Chi. Okay, so before we even get it, it's the Legend of the Ten Rings is the subcolon. But before we get into this, I'm going to butcher so many names today. Let me apologize in advance. I just want to apologize in advance. There's no way I'm going to be able to get, I don't know, 60% of these names right. It's not that I don't, like, I'm going to try as hard as I can, but just know that I'm probably going to mess up, and I'm sorry now. Jeremy, what's your plan? Just going to call the characters by their character names, or what's your plan here for this?
I didn't think of a plan. I just remember going over the movie title itself and the character name, kind of like the scene that they have when he reveals his real name to Katie. Katie's easy. Yes, but that's the point of that. But yeah, I don't know. We'll do our best, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Agreed. Before we get into that, I'll just remind everyone to follow us on Twitter at Tower Babelcast, facebook.com/Tower Babelcast. If you want to help support the show, head over to towerofbabelpodcast.com/support. And you can find links to do different things there, or head over to patreon.com/Tower Babelcast and find our film club. We do an exclusive Patreon film club every month. We just did Face Off as the last one. I really, really loved Face Off. Maybe more so than I should. Jeremy was making fun of it. He was like, no, you read into it too much. But I liked it a lot. Jeremy, tell the folks at home, what movie are we doing this month?
Well, we're sticking with the Nicolas Cage theme, I guess, here. And we are doing a movie called Snake Eyes from 97, 98.
I want to say it's
not to be confused with the new G.I. Joe.
That's right.
Box office bomb or whatever. The trailer for that movie looked dope, though. I remember, I'll be honest.
A cool song in it. I feel like that was a big help. Anytime there's like a trailer can be really, really good or really, really bad based entirely on the music, basically.
Yeah. I've come victim to it too for, I guess, or all of us maybe, but for Mortal Kombat recently, I remember the trailer for that was just like pretty spot on, and then just didn't turn out that way.
Would you say that it was better than the Wonder Woman 1984 trailer? Because that's my
that's a great
sucks,
trailer too. Yeah.
But that first Wonder Woman 1984 trailer is, in my opinion, top tier trailers. Another trailer that I've from more recent memory.
It's extremely memorable. You kind of know the beats of it, and then and then the song, like you said, it's like it was that trend. You kind of pick a song from the 80s or just like an older generational song, and then you kind of remix the beat of it. And
I listened to that remixed version of that 80s song as like it had its own like playlist, like four hours of just that song looping.
I don't think I've listened to that song just on its own.
It's pretty sweet. But like the remix version from the trailer. So I listened to the trailer version. Another trailer that I've really liked in recent memory is the Top Gun 2 Maverick trailer, which, of course, delayed again, but tragically, obviously. But
there's another trailer that came out today that we'll talk about on the regular show. So this is kind of just a taste of that. But that trailer, just for a little preview, blew me away. It looks just incredible.
Hint, it's another 90s movie. Yeah. So, all right. Is it? Well, I guess it's 2000. Doesn't matter.
Was it 99?
That's what I'm trying to remember, if it was 99 or 2000, and I don't remember now, but it's one of the two. Exactly. Stay tuned. We're going to be doing a regular Tower Babel podcast, which we haven't done in a little bit. As you know, things are complicated during the COVID stuff, so we haven't been as regular with our regular shows. We're hoping to fix that. Obviously, I say that a lot, but that's our endeavor.
You gotta hope.
Yeah, exactly. You got to strive to be great, and then that way, if you what's the saying, Jeremy? If you aim for the stars, you land on a cloud, something like that.
Maybe. There's actually there's a quote in this in Shang-Chi that an older like lady says.
Yes,
that
so good,
similar
right?
to that.
Aim at if you aim at nothing, you will hit nothing.
Yeah. So yeah.
And it is, I think, Jeremy, I'm so glad you brought that up because I love that, that, you know.
Well, we saw it in the theater together and I was actually, I looked over, I was like, he's got to be writing this down on the notepad. And you didn't put the pen to the paper there at that moment. So I was like, I don't know what he's yeah. looking at here.
He's obviously not clocking the important stuff. No, that's funny that you mentioned that, Jeremy. Obviously, so I've seen it twice. I watched it once on opening night and then again with you yesterday. And I loved it both times. So let's just give our overall impressions. Then we'll jump into spoilers like we usually do. I think this, you know, I went in with expectations that were, I think, decently high, like a medium, like a 7 out of 10 expectations, I would say. And I would say that it met and exceeded my expectations in almost every way. It just fits into the MCU in this like really natural way. It doesn't feel like another retread of another, you know, origin story, even though it is. It has a different feel to it. And it has a really great vibe. The pacing is, I think, pretty good. I think it has some, you know, third act problems, shocker. But overall, I think it's really, really good. Jeremy, what did you think?
I am in, you know, I would echo everything you just said. I mean, I'm right there with you. I think, like you mentioned that it fits well into MCU. Like, I totally agree. But I also, as I was watching it, it just felt so refreshed. And like, there were moments where I was like, wait, this is a Marvel movie. Like, I didn't, like, there wasn't anything that jumped out at me that was like telling me this is a Marvel movie. That's like your typical stuff, maybe here and there. But it, you know, specifically with like one Easter egg or joke character that just really extracts from the MCU. But other than that, I was just enjoying that it wasn't really reminding me of a classic MCU origin story, even though it has a lot of those elements.
Yeah.
I just think all these new kind of bold other elements that it brings to the table with this amazing action choreography, the way it's filmed, how the battles or the fight sequences are paced so well after you learn a little bit, then they get you right back into one. It doesn't necessarily feel repetitive. It feels like everyone's kind of up in the ante a little bit more or a little bit faster or just changes the dynamic a bit more. And then like with the music as well, it's just very exciting. You know, beats and just kind of energy it's bringing to it, mixing Jeremy. With that cult, the Asian culture,
yes, totally.
and those instruments.
I love the music. I just thought the score, coming out of the movie the first time, I just couldn't get some of the songs out of my head. I just thought they were so catchy and they totally worked to drive. Talk about pacing, but driving the tone of each fight had its own kind of its own theme music. And even parts of the movie that aren't fights have really cool, you know, music. And I think another element that totally is nailed here is that Shang-Chi has a very distinct and memorable like theme, which I think is a problem throughout the MCU, or at least it was for a very long time. You'd say
hum it or sing it right now?
No, I could not.
Okay.
No, I couldn't. But here's the thing. But also, like, could I hum Ray's theme right now? Probably, actually. But but what I'm saying is, like, I think that there wasn't these distinct musical cues for individual characters throughout most of the MCU. The Avengers are an exception. They have, a very distinct sound, right? But most of the other characters don't. And Shang-Chi being different from the rest of the, MCU, right? The first... you know, Asian American character hero in Marvel to take center stage. Obviously, you know Wong makes an appearance. He's in the trailer, so it's not really a spoiler. A lot of pressure there, but like just a very distinct style and feel that feels different in a good way. You know,
yeah, it feels epic too. It's just like a really good. You know, big old adventure kind of movie where we're all discovering these new cool things. And I think above all, I just think these characters, these actors are just so likable.
It's
just,
God. Yeah.
You know, the main character just exudes Simu Liu, right? That's his name, I believe. It's just Canadian incredible. Kid. You know, it's just it's just so good.
He's instantly, he feels like instantly relatable. Like you could just like, you're like, I would want to hang out with that guy. He's like, it seems like a cool dude. Really down to earth. Understand what I, Jeremy, what I love about his character is that he is able to see through the bullshit.
Like, yeah.
The movie is constantly throwing, for lack of a better term, bullshit at you. Like all these kind of like, all these big ideas and these like kind of circular logical loops that like, you know, are supposed to explain why characters are doing certain things. And Sean, the character, Shang-Chi, who goes by Sean for part of the movie, is just, he just like not, he just it doesn't listen to that stuff. He's like, these are the things that are important. Here's like, here's where I am emotionally. We kind of get that like right away. And then the rest of the movie is just, he doesn't deviate from that. It makes sense. He's willing to project this light of rationality onto all the, every single problem in the movie. Right. And it totally works. I love it.
Yeah. It totally works too. Cause just the character's like origin too, right. With his training and where he's come from and what, and like what we learned through, you know, the first sequence on the bus. That he's just a complete and total badass. And then we dive even deeper and it's like, he's just he's the ultimate like Jason Bourne essentially, but like times a million, like he's just been trained to overcome or just navigate, you know, any obstacle that comes his way. Like
there's a really, you know, obviously DC and Marvel borrow from each other very frequently. This is not a shocker or surprise, but you know, I'm watching these things and I'm pulling from my memory of where I'm feeling influences. And there's definitely for me a real I'm trying to Batman villain, Ra's al Ghul-esque element to this, like, and his kind of his secret underworld thing is the Ten Rings feels very much if you liked that stuff with Ra's al Ghul in Batman Begins, obviously, but also in, you know, the animated series and whatnot. There's I think for me a very distinct reflection of that. Here, I think it works better here in most because it feels more complete. The it's less like shrouded in mystery. There is certainly mystery, but like it's enough is revealed to make it feel believable enough. Whereas Ra's al Ghul stuff kind of always feels like, well, there's too much magic. There's too much, and there's obviously a lot of magic here too. But it just
they go over it like immediately, pretty much in like a pretty like epic history or historic like battle or whatever, and they showcase the ring's power and like its dynamics and its visual nature, what it can do. It's pretty entertaining. Like every time we see it happen, like it's solid looking too. Like it, so.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into, I guess, more spoilery territory. So again, if you haven't seen the movie, come back. We're kind of going to decipher this kind of not necessarily scene by scene, but we are going to talk through some of the beats. For me, Jeremy, for my money, the bus scene that like basically the first action scene, pardon me, is that like tops the movie for me in terms of action moments, because I think it's so inventive and fun and exciting. And they haven't really established at this point this third act element that is really fantastical, you know, like just create, like there's, we see some of it or like a very opening scene, but you know, we're modern day and we're catching up with these characters and we're seeing, you know, hey, here's our main character and he's a valet, you know, like that, you're like, what's going on here? And then almost right away, you're into this moment where he has to defend himself and his friend. Right. And it's just so badass. Like there's just so many cool moves. The music I think is the cool, like that's the coolest one. And the thing that's cool about this music, Jeremy, for me, is that it's this blend of electronic music. It's like techno in certain parts with this, you know, again, traditional, and I'll say traditional and I'll couch that in the sense that my only exposure to quote unquote traditional Chinese music is through pop culture. So, you know, my lens is skewed and I'm just put that out there and to be completely honest, but the music is so cool and I'm a big fan of electronic music, or at least I was. And when it's used in this way, it reminds me a lot of like, you know, you talk about Mortal Kombat again, it makes me think of that Mortal Kombat reboot and some of the stuff they were doing at that time, which was like using Skrillex and like some of this really deep house and dubstep. And it was
the game,
like,
yeah, the game reboot.
It exactly. And it would totally, I loved it. I mean, a lot of people did. And it's obviously not as extreme here, but it, the way it kind of like slowly, it'll like bring in this like treble beat and it'll be like almost this traditional kind of like strings or woodwind. And then it'll bring in this, and then like a couple seconds later, then you got the big, like the big 808 and like this really deep bass. And then that's when stuff really picks up. And the bus sequence is so much fun. And we get introduced to this, to Razor Fist, who is a comic book character, a very obscure comic book character, but I guess to some degree, I guess so is Shang-Chi. And the fight is so cool. And I remember thinking, the first time I watched it, I feel like surprised. Like, where did this giant guy come from? I did not notice, but he is actually sitting there in the back of the bus the whole time. I didn't notice that the first time, but totally fun. What did you think of that bus sequence?
Yeah, it's just so over the top and just so well choreographed and filmed and executed. You know the spacing and the geography. It's not confusing. It's got a lot of hints of like a Jackie Chan type fight where he kind of uses his environment and just manipulates everything around him. And like, this is the moment too, where we're learning of Shang-Chi and like his abilities. But before this, we just like him so much. He's kind of like down and out. And just to see him prevail and just like, no, like he's not like, he just James Bonds the situation, essentially, with the finale of the bus and all that stuff and like how it separates and he saves everyone. It's just a really good intro scene to showcase your main hero's capabilities, his strength,
who he is as a wits. Person, right? Yeah. Like what he cares about.
Like, yeah.
He puts the guy into like an arm bar and is like, everyone go to the front of the bus. And he's got a whole big plan set up. You get everything you need to know about Shang-Chi as a character is kind of expressed in this fight scene. And of course, it's also kind of funny that you've got that guy filming it on his phone and like he's like the line where he's like, listen, I took a little bit of martial arts, so I'm gonna rate this fight as it goes. And it's like, that is just like, I understand that a lot of people have like this problem with Marvel not ever really taking itself as seriously as it maybe could, because it undercuts its drama by using like moments like that
it's always sprinkled throughout those types of moments, and they're pretty smart with where they do it. And I think this movie is an example of that. But like, I wasn't like during that sequence, like I don't like, for me personally, I don't even need that. Like,
yeah,
I was like, my body was like moving, like kind of like on the edge of your seat in certain moments, because you're like, okay, how is he going to dodge this or get through this? Or like, oh, like just like the next thing that happens, it's always something cool. I think the fight scenes are worth the price of admission alone.
100%. And to be fair, it is like three quarters of the movie is fight scenes, but it's funny, Jeremy, I remember thinking out like at one point during the movie yesterday, because the second time it just really helps to kind of take a step back and kind of look at the larger picture. And I remember thinking like the actual amount of time spent that's not in flashback, because there's so much flashback in this movie, right, is basically like 48 hours from the moment that bus scene takes place to the finale is like a couple days, maybe at max. But you spend so much time in these extended fight sequences and flashback sequences that set up the next kind of dramatic moment that you don't really notice while you're going throughout the movie, like really kind of clocking how long in real time things are happening or what's going on. Which kind of makes things like how Katie becomes like, how does she become such a good archer so quickly? It's kind of like, what's going on there? I'm mostly willing to give the movie a pass on that stuff though.
She's the comedic relief. I mean, she definitely comes off very genuine and likable, and it's interesting to see how like their friendship, like if that evolves or it stays just a friendship. What was I gonna say? I forget completely.
Well, I mean, so Awkwafina, she is good. Right. By the way, we are live, and I am the AC adapter to the camera that we're using stopped working today. So I put a battery in, but that also might die. So at some point during this live performance, the the video might just go away completely, but the audio will remain.
Oh yeah, I remember what I was gonna say. I'm when you talk about the flashbacks, like
yeah,
I think there was a certain point where it was like, oh okay, we're going back again, and there's like, oh, okay, we're going back again. Mm-hmm. But I kind of once it was done, I appreciated the time they kind of put into these characters that I think they didn't necessarily need to do. Like we would have got the gist of it, and like would have you know sure. just moved on or whatever. But I just kind of like appreciate that character build up, the relationships, like with the mom. With her young kids and stuff, like we need to kind of understand the impact that has on that family.
Totally.
So it's just awesome to learn more about the mother and like obviously all those qualities are now in or they've been passed on to Shang Tsung. So
right,
or but not Shang-Chi.
But not to the daughter.
You know, doesn't care and is taken over. It just wants an empire and essentially yeah, is taken over right. her dad's towards the end.
She's the Talia al Ghul character.
Yeah. This,
yeah. So I think, by the way, that, you know, there's some amazing performances in this movie, like just really, really top. So you mentioned, obviously, Simu Liu.
Liu.
He's great. Totally steals the show. But there's obviously some other really big names in this movie that I think specifically, I think of, I'm sure I'm saying this wrong as well, Tony Leung, who plays a version of the Mandarin, quote unquote, right? He doesn't go by that name. He makes fun of it.
Yeah. He's got a lot to do in this movie. He might be in this movie just as much as the main character, maybe.
Sure. And I think you got to give props because one of the biggest complaints we had with Marvel for however long it was that
like two-dimensional villains yeah.
right? And now we've got I just remember, Jeremy, think of the first Ant-Man movie and that villain in that
good
movie.
Actor though who played Yellow Jacket or something. Yeah.
Yes. It is Yellow Jacket, so good call because I couldn't remember what that was either. But yeah, I mean, I couldn't clock it. I'm like, I don't even know couldn't remember that guy's name.
Yeah, he was just bad for being bad's sake. Like there's plenty of moments of you just kind of understand like what he's going through, and then you just understand that he's fooled. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like the Lord of the Rings type. Spell that is on him, but he obviously means the best, but his whole perspective on life is we can't really understand it. Like he's been around for thousands of years, like,
right? That line in the back of the movie where he's like, you know, take a seat, young man. He's like talking to this old man, and you're like, oh yeah, he is super old, but you don't really think about that. Just come back to his performance. Like I just think he steals every scene. Like,
yeah.
His face is so emotive. You totally understand where he's coming from, right? He just wants his wife back, and he's been promised this in some, roundabout way.
And we know how he acted before he met his wife too, right?
Right.
So, like, we know what he's capable of and what he wants. He's kind of just seeking, I guess, just pure power or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he loses it. And then, yeah, his kids are of age, and it just creates this really cool dynamic in the family.
Well, and when I was talking about before, this kind of this like calling out the bullshit. So, like you said, it's obvious to us that he's being fooled, but it's also obvious to Shang-Chi that he's being fooled, right? At no point, and it's so funny because there's this long like explanation of like kind of like what's motivating him and all this stuff. And then he just stands up and says, "What are you talking about? This makes no sense."
Yeah.
And then is instantly like thrown in jail for saying it. Like they kind of just blush over that as quickly as they can. Don't think about how it doesn't make any sense. Fair enough. But you know, I certainly noticed. You know, so
well, they go back to it, I guess, right? Like he knows something we don't.
The thing that does bug me a little bit, if you're talking about dynamics, the sister, Zhai Ling, is does take a back seat for most of the movie. Now, obviously, we know that in the post credit scene, she's being set up for, you know, to kind of fill in to be the next big bad for him as a character. But until we get there, there's just so little, you know. We know that she felt abandoned, and that's it, basically, right? And she runs a fight club.
The abandonment was the big thing, though. Like, you know, mm-hmm. losing her mother, then brother, then essentially father. So the whole family, they kind of go over that. There's a moment towards the end where, like, you know, she's almost sacrificing herself. Like, she doesn't feel that connection or that want or that love. And then he chooses the right choice this time, saves her. So I think that, like, those moments were pretty cool. I thought, like, sort of special or deep or whatever.
Yeah, no, I get. Yeah, for sure. And, like, by the way, the performance of the mother, although she's not in the movie very much, I think is, like, really, really cool personally. Like, I thought it totally worked.
Yeah. Well, the intro, yeah. It just, you know, we see that kind of repeated again once Shang-Chi learns, like, of her, like, fighting prowess or dynamics. It's such a unique and cool, defensive, effortless, mm-hmm. type fighting power. And she just nails it.
That may be my second favorite action scene, actually, is when Zhu Wenwu, who is, again, the Mandarin. I'm just going to say the Mandarin for short. Just bear with me. I understand. But just bear with me. So the leader of the Ten Rings, he, when he finds her for the first time, this really kind of evocative of kind of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon-esque fight scenes where she kind of, like, glides around this very picturesque green and blue, and it's just gorgeous.
Yeah, it's right? Like a comic book, you know, art come to life too.
Yeah. So I thought that was really fun too. There's one element that I thought really stood out to me, which we're talking about kind of the different location. I wish I could remember. I don't have my notes in front of me now because I lost my notepad. I don't know where it went. But the location where the dragon is and where they go is this whole other dimension and realm. And there's, like, they talk about these massive cities and culture and world that, like, we don't really see. We just get to see this one little village protecting this one, you know,
with these, like, lion creatures.
Yeah. And those are all, and by the way, all those creatures are all, like, creatures from ancient Chinese mythology.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. I think that they look really good. Like, the CG on them, I think, is very, very good. That being said, overall, CG wise, I think there's certainly elements that stand out as being not as good as others. For the dragon, yeah, looks amazing. I'll just say that, right? But yeah, there's this moment where they're escaping the Ten Ring compound and they're, like, driving up this ramp and they get stopped by a truck, a car, and two motorcycles. And it looks like, and, like, the camera's inside the car and it's looking up at this ramp. It looks like the windshield is just a cutscene from a video game. It looks so bad. It, to me, looks so bad. And I think there's a couple scenes where they use CG cars in the movie. And it just looks kind of like a 360 game at certain moments. But mostly great. I would say the rest of the time, it's mostly great. And yeah, it's not really trying to exceed its grasp too much until, of course, this third act. And we'll kind of jump around a little bit, but let's talk about that for a moment. Because what was your kind of take on this final confrontation between the village and these soul suckers and this drag? Like, it just all feels like two different movies almost.
Yeah, it just feels like your stereotypical, like, third act battle. It's got to be pretty grand and have a lot of sides and, like, a mm-hmm. twist within it. And, like, all the characters, you know, end up coming to this spot. But it feels bigger. It's just, like, out of nowhere, it just feels kind of like this big, like, war. But I don't know if that necessarily came across for me, because I was just focused on, like, what's behind this wall or this tomb or whatever. Right. And then, yeah, I was just totally shocked, like surprised, had no idea like what was behind there, like what kind of battle would ensue from
that's,
from
that's so there funny, Jeremy, because I remember you left to go to the bathroom when they were explaining why shit's locked behind the door.
Okay.
And so for you, you're like, what is happening? But like for like everyone else who had seen everything, there's this kind of explanation where Michelle Yao's character, and by the way, great to see Michelle Yao. Love her and everything, obviously. But she plays Ying Nan, who's, I guess, Shang-Chi's aunt. She's kind of like walking along this path, and there's this like wood carving inside along the wall that kind of explains the story. Marvel loves to use these kind of like abstract, like they did it in
That's why I chose to go to the washroom at that point. I just don't care to see those types of scenes. Like, I get it. You're going to mm-hmm. give them some clues, or, you know, and then it all makes sense later. So I don't know. I thought it was just cool that all of a sudden I was just seeing these giant dragons just like fly around.
That's the thing. Like, for me, that giant soul sucker, like this kind of like Lovecraftian soul eater thing is the lamest I thought sucked. Like, I was like, this like is so much more fascinating to have this father son dynamic, right? Mm-hmm. And this secret organization that's been kind of behind the scenes the whole time, right? And they've been pulling the strings, but you know, he retired, and now he's back, right? That is so much more interesting than bullshit CG fight scene.
Well, that'll be the second movie with the sister.
Well, yeah, I guess, but don't discount some other bullshit CG element in the third act, I guess is what I would say. But like, you know, this moment where Tony Leung's character, he sacrifices himself, quote unquote, to save Shang-Chi, is so lame. It's just really lame, because he's punching his way at this cage, this wall, and he's letting out these like mini creatures. And like, obviously he can tell, like, he should be able to, you presume as an audience member, that he's able to see what's happening, and he's choosing to carry on anyway. Right. But,
well, we get his perspective and we hear the voice. It is the wife's voice.
Right. But are we supposed to believe that he's hearing it like it's like she's urging him on that whole time, or we only get
whenever we get the hint of it, when we see his face, it completely changes. Like, they do their best to explain to him, you know, that she's not behind there. But right. Then every now and then it calls to him, and he's just blinded by it. And like, is that just that creature itself doing that, or is there something else at play that we're unaware of?
Well, I think we're led to believe, the movie presents us with the information that the creature
is. No, there's a beacon in one of the rings, apparently, too, right?
Yes, which people are believing that it's you're talking about the first post credit scene,
right?
Yeah, Captain Marvel and Bruce Banner mm-hmm. and Wong, that it's a call back or a reference to the Eternals, which obviously is the next one, comes out next month, which is pretty crazy. And then we get Spider-Man a month after that, which is even crazier. But
then The Matrix in December.
Well, I mean, that is the month. That's the same month. December is going to be nuts, man. Like, it's if assuming everyone's still going to the movies, which I think is going to be the case. You know, I'm fairly optimistic about it. I don't remember what I was talking about now. But yeah,
just the amount of Marvel movies,
right? So there's this beacon that's coming from the rings, and like, I think the assumption is that they were a weapon from the Eternals, right? And that's kind of what's setting it up. That's what that's referencing, and that ultimately the father was being influenced by the soul sucker creature, who you know, is just a means to an end, basically, for this movie. Can we redeem Tony Leung's character before he dies? Yes. But like, this is what I mean by it being lame, Jeremy. He just pushes him out of the way and then gets his soul sucked up. Like, there's no, this guy's got like 50,000 tentacles coming out of his butt. And one tentacle almost grabs Shang-Chi. He pushes him out of the way and he sacrifices himself instead. Now, this is a very rote and like cliched idea. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, there's a lot of cliche in this movie.
I just think it comes off like just a right amount of like exciting enough to where mm-hmm. you may not be thinking about it or thinking about it in that way, like that typical obvious way. Mm-hmm. Which I think me and you had those thoughts, but for me, I was just so like I also liked that it showcased his ability to take down this like, you know, seemingly unbeatable creature. Mm-hmm. Further, just kind of emphasizing how powerful this character is. Rings.
Yeah, so the ring abilities. Let's talk about that for a second. I thought they were really well visualized and pretty freaking cool.
Like I mentioned before, like in the first like ancient fight sequence, they just nailed the look of it. It's transitions from whatever motion or power it's doing. It shows mm-hmm. you how you can jump with them or land with them from a distance. How you can kind of whip them around like they're all kind of attached. And it was never boring. It was always just cool. It's like, yeah, those are the rings. That's how they work. They just sit on his. They're obviously CG when he's just like at a dinner table.
Right.
Cause like, he's like, you can, if you look at them, like they just move kind of weirdly and like, there's no way they would just like sit at the, like the thinnest part of his,
right.
Of his wrist like that.
Well, like they're magic. Right. So you yeah. like, you can't figure it out, but like,
and they're originally finger rings, right. In the comics, they just decided to change that up.
Adaptation. That's the thing. I think what's so fascinating. Cause like when phase one and phase two were happening, we're like, we know these characters inside and out. You can't show us anything that we haven't seen before. We'll like it. We'll like it, but there won't be any surprises, right? Mm. This is all completely new. Like, I don't know Shang-Chi from, you know, from Razor Fist. Like, they both were invisible to my comic knowledge. So there's so many interesting things and, like, cool twists you can do. Now, I think if you're a fan of Shang-Chi, I'm sure there's a million cool, like, little touches and callbacks that we didn't necessarily catch, but just for me as like just a general Marvel fan, MCU fan who's seen everything, then it just all, like I said, fits. And they've made these tweaks, I guess, from the comics book stuff, but it never feels like silly, you know, when it easily could. And I think the lesson here is like, if you're making a Mortal Kombat movie, just watch this movie and this is how you do it.
I mean,
like,
I was thinking about Mortal Kombat a couple of times during this movie and I was like, man, like these, like Shang-Chi is just nailing it right now. Like it's just
exactly. The tone,
you care about this. This is cool. This is awesome. This is exciting. This character is new and exciting. Mm-hmm. This makes sense. We're going here now. Oh, now there's this. You know, it's 2 hours, 12 minutes. It's not like, you know, a crazy.
It doesn't feel long though.
Like, it doesn't feel long though. Because the pacing is so good and you get rewarded with just really well executed fight scenes that don't feel repetitive, that are in a new setting or have new stakes. Mm-hmm. Like even the scaffolding one, I thought was just brilliant.
Yeah.
Like the stakes just kept leveling up. And it's like the sequence when he's going to go save Katie when she's like about to fall.
Oh,
just his movements, you know what I mean? Yes. It didn't look overly CG. He looks like he's performing everything. It all looks seamless.
That being said, he's not though, right? Like it is a lot of CG that they're using, I think.
But like for the close up, but all the close up like choreography, he's definitely doing. Like he looks like he's, you know, very well into it.
And he's freaking ripped too. Thing, obviously, but
yeah, you gotta get ripped. If you sign a Marvel contract, you're in a Marvel movie. You're hiring a nutritionist, you're hiring a workout.
Well, sorry, those are things that are being hired for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
I love that just to shout out that scene with the scaffolding there, like those crazy ninjas with their weapons or whatever. Like when he grabs her, says the classic gotcha or whatever, but then mm-hmm. the guy like stabs him or like electrocutes him in the chest.
Yes.
It's just such a crazy little moment because you're like, he did everything he could.
Yeah.
And then that happens. And then the sister comes back out of nowhere who seemingly left them for dead. Just really exciting. Like, where are we going with this?
Going back to the Mortal Kombat thing for a second and giving props to the sister, Zhai Ling, just for a second. She has these kind of like these knives on a rope, basically. I don't know what I'm sure they have a real name.
They had that. Scorpion had that in Mortal Kombat, right? It was like a gardening tool or something, then tied with a rope.
And she uses the knives on a rope as like her main weapon. That's her like her thing. And I'm just like, this is how you like every Scorpion fight should look like this. That's what I thought the whole time. I thought that like all the choreography was really cool for that stuff too.
And it makes me excited to see these characters like as they progress in the MCU, who they go toe to toe with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cause you, in the, this movie just pretty, like they're going to bring it. Like if you're worried that they were on the level of like a Hawkeye or something, or even a Black Widow to a certain degree, who was obviously elevated through her movie and like whatever, you know, stunts and action sequences she was doing. But I just can't wait to see these characters battle out with some other ones.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I want to watch. I mean, obviously, I want to see the like the standard, like, okay, Shang-Chi's going to fight one of the heroes for some reason, and there's like a brief sparring match. Like, that's going to be really cool. You know,
yeah.
Wong versus
Abomination early on was a pretty cool thing.
The punch through the like he punches himself in the face. Jeremy, it blew my mind. I was like, I'd never even considered that as an idea. Like that's not even.
Well, I thought about like that. He did that to one of the enemies in Endgame, right? But he like cut off his like. Fist.
I think so. I get and like so. Obviously, it's been a long time since I've seen Endgame, but. I just watching that. I just thought was like, I'm like, this is brilliant.
Whoever but then we learned right after that they're like kind of in, they're like partners or whatever. Like they're making money off of.
Was that know. Like? Is that what's happening there? Like that's what I don't really fully understand. I wasn't really I sure what was so. Going on there.
It was all just like a play, and then Wong was stating that like he just needed to like focus a little bit more on like where his head was or whatever, and then he wouldn't have been like. That injured from it or something,
right? But you got to get like you're gonna. I guess like a lot of time has passed since the first Hulk movie, but like you're really gonna trust this guy in a cage match to not murder you? Just you know, whatever. I guess going back to kind of where I liked CG and didn't like CG. Didn't think Abomination looked that great in. Generally speaking there. I mean, obviously there's that.
Like, I just like the slight redesign, just kind of a bit more comic book accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder like if they use the likeness of the actor from Incredible Hulk at all.
It's not like that guy's that busy, right? Like you got to think that they could get him back. You know?
Yeah. I mean, everyone wants to come back. Like if you were in the early days of Marvel.
Let's see.
Like a Natalie Portman or something who's going to be a major component of the new
Natalie Portman who we thought was going to be, who we thought was like done with the MCU, like never coming back to this. She got the like short shrift and like, you know, that's it. That was her thing. Right?
Because of Taika, probably.
Well, I mean, Taika, I think honestly he could convince anybody to be in any movie at this point. Like that's where his kind of like his star
Well, he's just he's undefeated right now, right? Like you're box office hits and then you're doing and then you win Oscars or I guess one Oscar.
Yeah, he won an Oscar for writing.
You know.
I mean,
and then well Thor itself, right? It just kind of rejuvenated the MCU, you know, not necessarily that it needed it or anything, but like it just kind of it gave it a really fun take and a lot of people just really liked it.
Yeah, and they've definitely borrowed heavily from that tone ever since, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
So I mean, Thor Ragnarok is one of my favorite MCU movies. It's just so good, start to finish. There's criticisms for sure of it, but I just think it's just so much fun. I'm trying to see if there was Abomination was in here, but I can't find him in this list for some reason. So anyway,
and then we get Bruce Banner at the end there too. So it's like,
by the way, Hulk Bruce Banner with things. the splint on his arm still.
And he's back to his human form, which he wasn't before. So back to his human form, looking noticeably older as well, right? Like he looked like he had completely gray hair almost.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, still has the arm in a sling from using the Iron Man gauntlet to snap everybody back or whatever.
Right. So, and I guess the presumption is that won't heal. That's just who he is now.
Or it's just something that he's got to deal with for a while. It just, I mean, which I think is cool because like what he did was just such a major, thing to happen within the MCU,
mm-hmm.
you know, for him to just kind of like get over that and be fine, you know.
Yeah, no, for
sure. Decreases the dramatic effect, I guess.
The thing is like, at this point in the MCU, I have a hard time grasping when things are taking place after, like post post re-snap or whatever you call it, like I think there's an in-world name for it, but basically since the people have come back. And by the way, Tim Roth does play Abomination. He's just not credited. So, you know, there you go. So I can't remember what I was saying, but basically love the movie. Is there anything that you don't think really worked for you? I would say just that we're talking about kind of themes of the movie. This, you mentioned it right at the very beginning. This idea of like getting to know these characters really fast. And there's that funny scene of them having the conversation with their friends over like a cocktail.
Which just pays off so well later.
Yes. The very final scene.
Because it's just completely unbelievable. But then Wong comes back and it's just, everyone's just in shock because it's what they said is true.
And it's obviously amazing. By the way, Wong, who's the like kind of the through line to the MCU, here's the connecting piece.
As well as Trevor.
People love Wong. Like, I love Wong. I don't think there's anyone.
Do you love Wong? I love Wong.
I personally love Wong. I'm a big Wong head myself. But the theme, this idea, the main theme, driving theme of the movie was this idea of growing up, that you had to grow up to like continue with your life and being forced to, that you can't do it at your own pace. That's not how life works. Once you get to a certain point, you have to grow up, right? And I think most people who watch a Marvel movie can 100% relate to that idea, because essentially the very beginning of the movie basically says like, what are you doing watching this movie? Aren't you an adult? You know? and then the rest of the movie basically presents this idea that no, you can just be yourself. And being an adult doesn't mean being serious or mean being boring, you know. It just means finding who you are, right? I thought that's a really, you know, obviously maybe a little rote as well, but I think it totally works because you're right, it does pay off really well at the end. Anyway, back to what I was questioned. Anything that didn't really work for you?
I don't know. I think even as I was watching, I was like, man, like I just felt like they're nailing everything. Like there were certain things that maybe they could have trimmed down here or there. But like I said, I appreciated the character building through those flashbacks. I just think a lot of things were just unexpected and just a lot more worked for me rather than not. Mm-hmm. So like even just how the movie starts and just like, you know, it starts in Chinese and all that stuff. And like you think, oh, they're just going to kind of go away with this. But they really, you know, keep that going throughout the whole movie and like pay its like due diligence to that and respect to that. And like, I just really enjoyed all that.
It feels honest. Like it feels, again, coming from our perspective, two white dudes, but
yeah, exactly.
It feels like it's not making fun of or exploiting the Chinese culture, but like saying, look how cool it can be. Look at these cool badass lion dog things.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the kind of stuff that I feel like, and again, even coming back to the music, the way it kind of has this kind of retro, but also modern feel to it. So most of this movie does a really good job of balancing those things.
Yeah. It's just a perfect mix. Honestly, I just think they nailed it here.
So what, like you said, well, obviously we know for the next movie, the it's going to be the Ten Rings will return. The sister's taking over.
We've seen Captain Marvel again.
Well, yeah.
Super exciting.
Is it, Jeremy?
That's sarcasm.
Okay. You're not a fan. In your mind, she needs to be redeemed as a character in the MCU?
Like, do you remember her solo movie? Like, I don't really. Like, I just
I don't
know
really
she
remember,
got in a,
I don't
a,
remember
a plane
her,
accident or something.
I don't remember her from it. I remember like everyone else in that movie way more. Like I remember Captain.
Oh,
Rambo.
You're one of the guys who signed the petition online to remove her.
No, I did not. What you're saying. I did not do that. I did not. Please don't include me in that group. I remember Jeremy, if we're talking about Captain Marvel for a moment. I remember when she was cast saying, wow, that's really crazy. They just cast this Oscar winning actress to be Captain Marvel. That's really cool. Exciting, right? I didn't really have an attachment to the character, you know, really through the years. She's kind of been reimagined a lot of times. I think the kind of saddest thing about it for me was that like her performance isn't anything special in her movie. And that's kind of her what she's a really great actress. And it's like, I don't feel like it didn't come through. I don't know if it's the script's fault or that she's giving bad direction or what, but she's come off as this really cold kind of like, you know, badass, but like, I don't really get that vibe from her other than she just comes off as kind of feeling a little cart, like a little wooden, you know? I was going to say cardboard, but that's not really fair. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think generally with these movies, like when we're getting new character introductions in this phase of the MCU, there isn't so much like, obviously back at phase one, it was like Marvel, you know, Captain America 1 and 2 and then 3 and then, you know, Iron Man 1, 2 and 3 and Thor 1, 2 and 3. I don't think you're going to get that with these movies. I just think you're more, I mean, maybe you will, you'll get a Shang-Chi 2 at some point, you know, maybe 5 years from now. But he'll be swept up into, and obviously we see it at the very end of the movie. He's like, your life is going to change on this trajectory. It's never been seen before and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, he's at the Sanctum Sanctorum now. So he's going to be, he'll be learning about the bigger MCU and what's at play now and the new threats to come. And that's all going to be super exciting. But I think generally they want to extend the lives of these characters and give everyone a trilogy to a certain degree. I mean, with Black Widow, probably not like that. That was a whole
well,
different
yeah,
story.
There's a whole thing there. Do you hear how much she had originally asked? I'm not throwing her under the bus, by the way. So just kind of as a side note, if we're talking about Marvel stuff anyway, she apparently asked for $100 million because it was being released on Disney Plus. And then she got no response, which is why she ended up suing them. But like, then there's all these people saying, oh, I can't believe she asked for this much, all this stuff, yada, yada, yada. But ultimately, they had just thrown that out as kind of like a first number, and they were kind of like hoping to, you know, negotiate.
Well, that seems a little high in terms of like...
Well, we don't know all
like
the
Robert Downey Jr., I think the most he got paid for Endgame, I think, was $70 million. So I don't think... Like, from what I understand, it was that it was just the deal that was signed, you know, supposedly had like back end bonuses or deals.
Yeah.
You know, if it was just like in the theater, like a theater release to where they get millions
yes.
at once or whatever. But then they decided to change that and just go, you know, theater and digital, which lessens the revenue, I guess, in a certain way. And then it just contradicted kind of what she was supposed to kind of make. I believe
it's a perfect storm. I think in terms of like the problem with the new release models with this idea of like, you know, day and date or very short windows and like, what is it? What is modern film going
the
mean?
Theater itself, right? With directors at Warner Brothers, like Denis Villeneuve and you know, they just like, they want to jump ship almost because they don't want their movies to be seen on a small screen.
Jeremy, Matrix 4 is going to release the same time theaters as it will on HBO Max. I think that's nuts. That is nuts to me. Like,
yeah,
obviously, I have a certain regard for more movies.
But when we think of that, like, we're like, there's no way we're watching that at home. I would sit first row at the IMAX for that. Like, the music,
like front row,
the sounds,
like the, yeah, the opposite of nosebleeds, whatever you call
the,
that.
That movie series just, it's so iconic and it's back, like, now. Yeah. Like with Keanu and like, it's just, yeah.
Anyway.
But yeah, we'll talk about that in the other show.
Yeah. Okay. So let's wrap up here. Speaking of which, any final thoughts on Shang-Chi?
Just thoroughly enjoyed it. Just really happy for everyone involved in the creation of this movie. Just super excited to see where it goes. I never thought I'd be saying this about a Marvel movie like now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm Marvel phase one or early phase, like, you know, fanboy, those characters, those iconic actors now, like Robert Downey Jr., all that stuff. For me, the MCU kind of felt like just a little bit hollow,
stale,
I guess, or
yeah.
just, yeah, like, you know, it had bits and pieces from of characters and whatnot before, even major ones like Chris Hemsworth, Thor, who's still going, who's going into a fourth solo movie. But then you get then the announcements of the Disney Plus, like, you know, extending these characters into series was, you know, it sounded cool. Some of them were pretty cool for certain moments, but like ultimately, like, none of those did anything for me in terms of like what this movie did for me, like just on a different scale pretty much. So just thoroughly enjoyed it, super surprised by it. But like also like I knew like I really wanted to see this one, even Eternals, like those two, because they're just so new.
Yeah.
And like you said, like we just don't really have much knowledge on those two properties. So yeah, just super high on this movie for sure.
Yeah, I echo most of those comments. I would say that, you know, we never really mentioned the director. The director was Destin Daniel Cretton. I don't know his work. I'm just looking at his IMDb, and it's, you know, Short Term 12, The Glass Castle, Just Mercy. He kind of came on the scene apparently 2002 with a couple shorts. Didn't have a feature until 2012, but you know, the Marvel formula kind of, I almost at this point, unless you're a Taika Waititi type, auteur, you're kind of just painting by numbers in a lot of ways. So I have no critiques necessarily. Like, I think he does a fine job. I just, you know, nothing comes out as stands out to me in this movie as being particularly like, oh, this director really, you know, had a vision and executed on it. It felt more like this is a really solid installment in the MCU. It feels fresh in its own way. So maybe I get to give him credit for that a little bit, but
I'll give credit just in terms of, you know, helming this whole project and the pace, as well as like him and the editor, and just kind of what they're able to pull off here.
Yeah.
There's nothing too crazy that stands out. That's like, oh, like they shouldn't have done that. Or like, you know what I mean? Like you just had some nitpicks with some CG and, a little bit of the you know, the typical kind of third act stuff.
Yeah. But that's the thing. It's kind of, it feels a little formulaic. I kind of thought at one point during the rewatch that I was like, what would this movie be like if it was more kind of chronological? Like we kind of grew up with the character and kind of watched him, as a child, and then, you know, as a youth, and then the mom dying, and then his training, and then what that, you know, how that, his relationship with his sister or lack thereof. And then we kind of move into, you know, modern day. And then there's just these kind of like last couple days, quote unquote, real time, where he's kind of finding his sister, and then finding the secret entrance to the village, and then the end. Right. I thought about it and I thought, does that work better than
no.
what we got? And the answer is no. The answer is no.
It's the onion being peeled back layer by layer.
Yeah.
You know, it justifies things you've seen before. It furthers, you know, certain character developments. You know, because initially we know he's the main character and the superhero and all that stuff, but like you don't get that right away. You just get an average Joe essentially, and just how it builds, and then just to understand how he came to this, or to these abilities and this power. Through his family, his parents, and I guess his aunt too later on. It's just it's just such a cool way to look at it.
Yeah. Here's my other kind of small nitpick. The movie starts with this he gets this postcard that has the dragon on it, and he's like, and that's his impetus to go find his sister, right? And it sends him to that place where the
ambush club is. Pretty much, right?
Yeah, but if she didn't send, like, this is where it doesn't make any sense. Like, she didn't send the letter. Like, his dad sent the letter to set him up, but like they were just waited. They needed to wait till he got there before they went after her part of the emblem. That part doesn't really make sense. If you really think about it, you're like, it doesn't track. It's one of those things where like just like wave your hands and don't worry about it. But I remember thinking of the second time through, like, wait a minute. If her sister didn't send the envelope and they had to follow him to get to there, or he already knew where it was, why did he send the envelope at all? Like, it just, like, it's so odd to me.
Well, they convinced me through that. I thought it was just cool as hell when she said she didn't send it and then the power goes out.
Yeah,
but like, it seems very formulaic, but it's just like, okay, like, let's see where this goes. Like, this is cool. Like,
Yeah. And then obviously there's that cool ninja who kind of gets a crappy death. And by the way, so does that like old wise archer man. right?
Yeah, he just gets like bitten by the dragon or something, or like one of the little
ones.
Yeah,
like he basically, they're like, go around the corner, like we got to take out the big one before the dragon sucks up the other dragon.
So Katie can do it. And
yeah.
And but then like, make fun of that, how she can't even believe it happened, just one shot.
See, that doesn't work for me. Like that's where, like that where I'm like, ugh, like they're, like.
But we're already in celebratory mode at that point, right? So it's like, I think it works in terms of the formulaic nature of it, like in the order of it. But yeah, I'm with you there. Like most of the injected humor is, you don't necessarily need it, you know?
Well,
and I want to mention the Eternals trailer, like the end of the new one, like with the table breaking, and then he just says IKEA fall collection. It's like, that is just a joke you can throw in like anywhere, like on SNL or like it's, you know, it has nothing to do. It's just words that people are familiar with and they'll chuckle at it. Cause
I don't know. I think that's a clever joke.
It's at the end of a brand new Marvel movie where they finally announced that, you know, Academy Award winning director. And it's like, right, and then the first trailer was like he's going to be the next Captain America. So let's attach to the MCU. And then this one, let's end it on just like a cheap little gimmicky joke about IKEA. It's like, to me, it's like, okay, I don't need that.
Right. I get that's fair. That's fair. My defense of that is like, this movie needs to feel relatable. Everything you saw in this
and
movie
IKEA is relatable.
Is not relatable. So they needed something to make it feel grounded. And that's like, that line might not even be in the movie. Like, it might be one of those just like trailer scenes. There's a couple of those that we've now had, a lot of them now. I think Marvel's basically set the standard for that, where they trick you with trailers and show you one thing and it's something else entirely in the real movie, or it's not in the movie at all.
Oh, yeah.
So,
or that's more so the Russo brothers, because.
Well, that's true.
You know,
they're playing 3D chess where we're all just playing checkers. So, all right, we can wrap it up there. Yeah, we love this movie. I think it's really, really fun. Small gripes. That's all. Can't wait to see more of them. You can find everything we do at towerofbabel.ca. You can listen to me and my Star Wars co-host Rachel talk about The Bad Batch. If you haven't seen that show or you're just catching up, you can watch along with my and Rachel's recaps. You can find that at the website as well, or Small Screen Star Wars is the podcast name. You can subscribe to that independently. And if you want to help support the show, you can head over to patreon.com/TowerBabelcast. For as little as $5 a month, you'll get access to our monthly film club, as well as the back catalog of all those film clubs. A lot of fun ones in there. We were just talking about, at the top of the show, we're talking about Tom Cruise and Top Gun. We did Days of Thunder a few months back, well, maybe a year ago now. It was a long time ago. And wow, what a movie. You can go back and find that in there as well, and everything else we do. And it helps keep the lights on. So, again, that's patreon.com/TowerBabelcast. Okay, well, we'll be back very soon with more TOB, and we'll talk to you then.